on behalf of the chairperson of the committee.
Yeah, the chairperson fell ill yesterday and she's still not feeling well today. Actually, she's not that. Sometimes she won't be able to come to Parliament at all. But it was her intention to actually come for the committee meeting. In terms of the rules of Parliament, the committee is entitled to elect an acting chairperson in the absence of the chairperson of the committee. I'm going to ask members of the committee to nominate an acting chairperson for the proceedings of today and ask for a seconder and any other objections. May I? Honorable Lobanda? Yes, nominee. You nominate Honorable Ranto. Honorable Ranto, you are nominated as acting chairperson. Seconder? Honorable Sadie? Honorable Sadie seconded the nomination of Honorable Ranto. Any other nominee? None. Any other objection? None. Honorable Ranto? In that case, may this proceed to the chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Honorable members. And let me first apologize for arriving late. I had an early meeting today that I had to go to stand for the chairperson, as you have already heard that the chairperson has sick yesterday. And she thought today she's going to make it to the committee. Then today she's worse than yesterday. My humble apologies again. And let me first welcome everybody that is in here, the members of Parliament and the department. Honorable Minister, we welcome you. We are very happy to have you today in the meeting. We have been looking forward for this day. It has been a long time. It actually made us to be vulnerable to other things as the committee of Parliament, not to have you in the meeting. We welcome you very much with the members or the officials that are coming from your department. Members, there is an agenda in front of us. The agenda does not have a welcoming or an opening remark or anything. It does go straight to the briefing by Department of Public Enterprise on first quarter performance report for 2015-2016 financial year and progress made in addressing corporate governance challenges facing state-owned companies. And we have number two, that is discussions. Number three, consideration and adoption of minutes. And number four, way forward. And number five, can I put closure as number five in the agenda? And also, I don't know if I can say it's 1A or whatever, but the welcoming, I think it is very necessary to open and welcome members of the committee in the committee and the minister herself. I will now, before I give to the department, I will now give over to the minister to just give us a brief note on the department. Can we all switch our cell phones or put them at least on silent, please, members and please, officials. Thank you very much. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much. Chair, the portfolio committee meets at the same time as Cabinet, and so that makes it very difficult for me to participate. I have now run away from Cabinet to be here. But today we are focusing on the government shareholder management and the shareholder compact. And I want to talk to both of them at the same time so that I can be, I hope you would release me to go back to Cabinet. I do have a matter on the agenda. And the department will essentially do the purpose, the strategic context for the government shareholder management, the profitability analysis of the portfolio. They will look at the governance performance analysis, and then they will look at shareholder contact processes and cite company performance in relation to the share of the company that was concluded. But in essence, the concept of government ownership achieved by government conducting itself as a shareholder in essential sectors is emerging as an important vehicle by which the state can achieve strategic economic objectives. The success of such an approach requires a specific shareholder management model to combine commercial characteristics with the state's strategic intent. Enterprise ownership allows government to leverage the institutions that drive the development agenda of the economy to ensure the realization of these aspirations. This is further leveraged to influence the development path of the economy, in particular the growth of productive sectors. However, state shareholding is facing a number of challenges as I've outlined now. The state has both a public mandate and a strategic long-term objective that should not be displaced by short-term markets based on high profitability considerations. Through its ownership of commercial enterprises, the state is injecting non-market and public objectives into the private sector capitalist market system. This creates a delicate balance in that its strategic purpose subverts commercial viability, the enterprise will collapse. Similarly, if commercial consideration overrides strategic purpose, government objectives will compromise. In the worst case scenario, the presence of a strategic purpose should not be used by management to rationalize bad decisions. Very often in the portfolio, the management of the states and companies will say, but we are driving the developmental agenda, that's why we're not commercially viable. And this should not be the case. They have an obligation in our present economy to create a developmental path, which includes a whole range of things, like localization, like development of SMEs, like training and skills development, to actually create what the economy needs. And because it's within government, it's an agenda item for government with state-owned companies. But current legislation does not enable effective management of this delicate balance. There is a rationale for the concept paper on the government shareholder management legislation. The Constitution requires the establishment of treasury control and of national treasury, and they prescribe measures to ensure transparency and expenditure control in each sphere of government. This leads to the enactment of the PFMA with the primary focus to give effect to the above constitutional requirements. The shield functions of the state have not been legislated by the PFMA as a financial management legislation, as well as the Companies Act on the legislative status of state-owned companies. So there's a vacuum at the moment, and this vacuum deals with what happens to the 700 state-owned companies within government. If you think about it, there are 700, there are about 20-25 that are commercially driven state-owned companies. Mm-hmm. 6 of the 6 in the Department of Public Enterprise, the rest elsewhere. So I'm not responsible for 700 or 300 or 25, I'm responsible for state-owned companies. And in essence, the issue is that many have raised the point that this department should actually be overseeing, there shouldn't be a Department of Public Enterprise, and it should go and sit in its policy department. Now, that discussion is a discussion that's being driven by my department at the moment with other stakeholders where there are state-owned companies. For example, iTransnet, the Department of Transport, as TRASA. So, and before, TRASA used to belong to Transnet. Before, it used to belong to Transnet. Now, it's divided elsewhere. And the discussion that is happening amongst the executives at the moment is whether we should have a single ownership, a dual ownership, or decentralize the state-owned companies completely. And remember that my department, Public Enterprises, was actually established as a department for privatization. And since then, government has made a new decision that says, no, we're not privatizing the companies. We are rather using the companies to leverage the economy within the state and give government an opportunity to be able to do so. Now, there are a range of debates happening at the moment that speaks to us privatizing the state-owned companies. I have a very firm view that in basic services, like Eskom, that we should understand what the end state of energy should be, because Eskom still provides electricity to 95% of the population. And you should say congratulations on that, it's the 50th day of no load shedding, which it should be. And continued maintenance. But I'm not going to get that from Member Eric.
Minister, let's ask for my little congratulations.
Thanks for the attention. I will pass it on to the company. Having said that, though, for example, the asset base of just the two companies in the portfolio is about 750 billion, as I've said many times before. So, actually, getting the maximum out of the companies, and I know it's a very difficult thing for people to sometimes point, because there's so much crumbling the companies at various times. I'm also pleased to say that it's now 8 months that there's been no leadership crumbling within, say, an Exxon. But the concept paper is meant to actually look at what the governance model over these companies should be. And I'm very open to whatever serves state-owned companies best. So if the debate is that we should not have a public service department like DPP to run this state-owned company, then that's what we should be doing. So I've left it quite wide. Very soon we'll take the discussion into the public domain as soon as I've actually gotten agreement from all the departments that are affected by it. We'll take it into the public domain. But for the shareholder management to work, you need to have a private sector interface. A private sector participation interface. And that is the second concept that needs to come up. How do we manage the relationship between a public sector, state-owned company, and the private sector? How do we strengthen that relationship so that we have an economic growth that actually works? There's a whole lot. At the moment, the companies are all outsource lots of work, but it's not only the outsourcing, it's actually looking at strategic relationships. It's not just purchasing coal. That's not just the relationship we should be having with the private sector.
we should be having a different relationship that actually gives ownership to both parties. So I intend to finalize the draft committee paper by the end of the calendar year, which is in December, and initiate the appropriate consultation process on how to take some of these ideas forward. The second part of the presentation today will look at the shareholder compact. Now, of course, it remains an essential tool that the shareholder uses to direct company operations. And it provides clear targets that state and companies need to achieve in order to meet the legislative mandate and subsequently supporting government objectives. Progress on the implementation of the shareholder compact is monitored on a quarterly basis. And on a quarterly basis, we give them what's called an investor analysis of what they have presented to us. In the case of companies facing serious sustainability challenges, the frequency of reporting is normally adjusted. In fact, sometimes I think I'm the minister of ESCOM, because the reporting then becomes a lot adjusted. Now, the portfolio committee has also copies of the shareholder compact. And I want you to look at the predetermined objectives in the annual report. And tell me what more, what other objectives you need to see. There's a real issue of confidentiality of some of the things within the company. And one of the issues is, for example, that we have a situation with Comey at the moment, where they're taking SAA to court on non-competitive borrowing from state, or guarantees being granted. The second one is, say a company like ESCOM would be putting into the public space where they purchased coal from and so forth, and it does give an unfair advantage and disadvantage to companies within the process. Now, we presently, I'm asking ESCOM to look at, I'm just answering my own question, to look at the short, medium, and long-term purchasing of coal and policy that has to happen there. So that that the shareholder compact eventually emerges as a scheme of policy objective that creates the kind of target. Chair, I wonder if I could pause there. And by office 10, I should have to leave.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, for the short briefing that you gave us. I will give over, because we are living at 10:30, I will give over to the members if there is anything that is really issue that makes you to that you must ask questions. I will give over to you, members. Honourable Mazoni, Honourable Yenge, Honourable Heidi, and Honourable Mare, in that order. No, maybe they will just raise concerns. Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Honourable Mazoni.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Honourable Chair, we must organise, if we have a meeting like this, we don't go anywhere that Minister has to go to a cabinet meeting, because we like having her here, and she likes being with us, even though she says she doesn't. It's not fair. It's really not fair to Minister to put her in a position, and we must organise our values correctly and have it on a Tuesday. There's no reason why we should have to put the Minister under this kind of pressure. Minister, I'm very interested by what you say about the original concept of public enterprise and how it was developed as a privatization mechanism, as a catalyst for privatization, and then being changed. Now, I understand that governments change and governments work according to certain ideologies, and that's fully acceptable. But, Deputy Minister, Minister, when companies are in economic downfall and spiraling downfall, which we've seen of late, you know, I mean, we can be perfectly honest with each other, when we see the economic state of SAA and we see the economic state of Eskom, certainly at some point you come together as a DPE and you as the representative of government and you take it back to government and you say, listen, things aren't working here and we need to make a dramatic shift in the way we think and the economic development of these companies. And I'm not saying, for example, you know, I've been accused many times of being completely obsessed with privatization. And I speak to you, Minister, personally, that I'm not saying we have to completely privatize our state-owned companies, but partially privatize things, which they've done all over the world, and which we've done very successfully here. And I use the Bunnell model as the perfect example of taking a company that was in an economic freefall and has turned itself into an incredibly successful entity by splitting itself up into three and keeping a section for government and privatizing certain sections. And it's just beyond me why we won't even enter into a discussion model about perhaps doing that, for example, for Eskom. Now, Eskom's a wonderful national entity that we have. And I am full agreement that a section of Eskom must always remain South African property because it's something we should be proud of. But it's not to say we couldn't split Eskom up according to the Null model and privatize sections of it. It's almost like privatization has become a really taboo, naughty word that we're not allowed to say. And I just wonder, Minister, why is there this complete fight back every time privatization is mentioned, even semi-privatization? And then share my very last point. Minister, people are, you know, and this is one of the reasons why we ask continuously for shareholder contracts and we ask for deal contracts. It's because there is almost like a veil of secrecy over everything. Now, this is a twofold question, because what you've said about maybe DPE one day not existing, we know that's a long-term eventuality, and Minister, I think it's quite safe to say that for the rest of your tenure, you will be the Minister of Public Enterprises. But 10 years. But, you know, we hear every day, Eskom going to be moved to energy. Transnet and SAA are going to be moved to transport. I've been hearing this since I've been on the committee, which I'm aging myself, but it's almost 7 years now, and it's not happening. So, you know, could we just have some clarity, and so one thing for all, we get these rumours out of the way. I know that Eskom will remain with DPE. I know that SAA is going to remain with DPE. But can we just sort of get that out of the way? And then also, Minister, you know, with like the diesel contracts and the coal contracts, obviously, we understand the commercial sensitivity of these things. But what the South African public and what we as a committee want to know is that there's no dodgy deals going on. That's all we want. We want to know that when we hear about a hairdresser and a manicurist who have got the biggest diesel contract in the country, we want to know that they've got it fair and square, that they're not a cousin of a friend of a brother. That's all we want. We don't want to know that the machine sends it to us. We just want to know that there is no corruption and no skullduggery going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And greetings to the Minister, officials, and the honourable members. Let me first appreciate the overview as presented by the Minister. And safe to indicate that it is a pleasure on our part to actually get into the 30th day of Eskom having assured that there is no load shedding. We want to commend the leadership of Eskom, especially the acting CEO, Mr. Molefe, for the changes. Drastic changes that are there and the improvement that we see at Eskom. Secondly, Honourable Minister, the issue that relates to privatization is something that people like myself, originating from the poorest of the poor and the downtrodden of the country. And once you mention privatization, you are not talking to those people. And we want to encourage the department to ensure that when this privatization is actually mentioned, it mustn't be something that says we must not behave as if we don't know the fact that privatization will never ever be a benefit to the poor. But privatization is aiming to ensure that there is growth and there is a sharing of the economy. But when we talk of privatization of companies of this nature, definitely the benefit does not go to the poor. We appreciate your endeavors in the department for the improvement and the level of land that we have covered to ensure that Transnet, DNL, and other state-owned enterprises that are performing very well. And we appreciate the challenge and your intervention to assist Eskom where it is today. And we are very proud of your department, because this department is relevant. There's no question of people asking as whether this department is relevant or not. In line with the National Development Plan, Honorable Minister, I would want you to say just two sentences in line with the NDP, the role of the state-owned enterprise, because we seem not to understand fully that importance of the growth of the economy and the machinery of the economy being these state-owned enterprises. My question is only one. When is the minister contemplating to ensure that Eskom board actually gets to a board where they appoint full-time the executive starting from the CEO and having that board up and running, because they've started very well. There are no more crises that are reported about, but the full-time employment needed as of yesterday. Thank you, sister.
There's a comment not a question as such, but I think over and above commending the department and the EFCO on the issue of the 30 days with no security, also to commend them with regard to the severity that was starting to witness, of course, as a result of the appointment of continuously. You, I think, what, as you have said on a number of occasions, Minister, you have our support with regard to issues of consequence management to ensure that all these agencies do perform as they are required. You made mention of the issue of the finance. The reason why we've always been raising this issue is because as an oversight body, we definitely need to know exactly what kind of contract has been entered into with all these entities, so that we are also able to explain wherever we are at our level and do the necessary oversight as such. But as I indicated, for the first time today, at least we appreciate this reservation of the complaints. But going forward, we have to do it differently to ensure that we know exactly what kind of contracts that we have to do with each and every resources, so that we are able to do the real oversight and an oversight both ourselves. But as I indicated, at least for the first time, we appreciate the summarization in terms of the content as all the entities that we got to the department. But thanks very much. I think this is a good start. At least there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning to the Minister. A lot has been already said, more comments than questions. I must just, like, also three comments and a question. In terms of the National Development Plan, there is much advertising to the areas of companies. And where the economy of South Africa is like in a hanging situation, to put it that way, is there a way that you as Minister can accelerate the different programs under your control via the various state-owned companies to accelerate the infrastructure that must be put in place to enhance and create job creation for the people of South Africa? Because I think that would be a major thing before departments of state enterprises. Secondly, this whole discussion, I will welcome that, the private public public partnership as far as the Delhi state-owned companies is concerned. The question always will remain, of course, in the percentage share of it, because that will be always the issue, and that will be the main issue of discussion when it comes to the public domain. Then, in Afrikaans wil ek die vraag in termen van Transnet. Ek dink ons het ook 'n berig gelees in die bidde rondom dit. Ek weet die saak is dit die kyk, maar die siening het rondom hierdie saak van die pensionarisse wat nou weer voor die na punt gedryf word, en wat is die siening oor die stand van sake daar, vir ek gelees. Dus ek graag die net die siening oor die weet oor dit. Baie dankie.
Thank you, honorable members. Minister, I just want to raise a concern. Maybe I would be taking from what Honorable Luyeng has said, especially on the appointment of your executive in the SOCs. You know the reason we ask this question. When will the especially with the ECOM issue, there's a permanent, do you call it a permanent in the sources, a permanent CEO, which we think if a person is not permanently employed, he or she might do the work passionately because he loves the work. But at the end, he will end up having problems because he is not appointed permanently and is not doing exactly what is expected of him. We would want to know what is happening. If there is any other SOE, SOC that is having acting something, whatever, even if it's not the CEO, acting something, when are we going to take that acting position and change it into starting from your department, Minister, when are we taking that to a permanent position? And for how long as these people act? Are there no targeted time for them to act? Is it just open until there's a post being advertised for them to stop acting? The other issue, Minister. Within all of us, we are focusing on SOCs that are on media and are always on public interest, and we leave all other SOCs. I saw also in the report of the committee that the board members that are being appointed, it mentioned only few SOCs, but Safcol, I think Safcol is a new board, if I'm not mistaken. Safcol is a new board, and there's nothing. And Alexco also, and there is nothing that is really on air with those SOCs, which I think, Minister, they are very important in the social economic of a country. So I think we need to take them on board also, as much as maybe people see it not as a threat to the economy of the country. That may make those SOEs to think, because there is no focus on the SOEs. The other last question that I have: SAS is very stable, or is stable, but there is a looming fire that we are not aware of. Maybe as this entire enterprise that is here now, small fire coming from the worker of SAX. Minister, I just want to check with your department and the SOC itself, do you have any interaction with the worker down to SAX? They have been emailing us a lot. They've been emailing us with a lot of, or sending a lot of emails to us concerning their jobs and the future of their jobs. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Minister. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Did we say that pre-1994 the DPE was a department for privatization? The government then changed, and the ruling party at the moment does not support privatization. So I feel like before when you govern the country one day, you maybe know. But let me make another. But let me also say that I'm not opposed to strategic partnerships. In fact, you must remember that I've actually called for a strategic partnership within SAA a couple of months ago. SAA is not in my portfolio any longer. It sits with Treasury. But I'm not opposed to strategic partnership, and that's why I support what the NAL is doing. Now, because it has the IP for many aircrafts and so forth, I mean, we're the only country in the world that produces my favorite aircraft, it's the Red Fox. It's just so lumpy and, but we now go into agreements with various countries, and then there's a transfer of skill both ways. There's a shared economic benefit and so forth. It's now, well, it's trying to move into maritime, but it doesn't build ships. So there's a shipbuilding component in the Western Cape, for example. And not to sell that only, but it's a harbour in the Western Cape and in the Eastern Cape, by the way, and in KZN. And what the idea is to make sure that this kind of thing happens. But I, as I said before, I really hold the view that for basic services, we should not privatize. However, and so ESCOM is a provider of basic service, electricity. So, however, even if we were to think about breaking up the company, it's divided into transmission, distribution, and generation. All three of them are interdependent on each other. The one can't exist without the other. I think at this stage, it's just too vulnerable to even contemplate that. However, we also need to understand what are the elements, what's the energy mix, what's the impact of energy, and that's the discussion that we're having with the Department of Energy, in order to determine its control within it. Because if we understand that, then one then brings back the ISMA law in some respect. So the discussion has to do with the fact that we've got to determine the strategic role the SOC plays. And they're now in my portfolio. And I have not stopped them from going into strategic partnerships with this. I think it's an important element of what Denal has done. In fact, Denal's order book is way over the 50 billion that it had a year ago. We leave now to go and secure quite huge deals in the UK. And they've actually niched themselves very well. So they've actually created a niche market in the East. They're now shifting their market back into the kind of UK area for them to be able to produce. So the discussion is a discussion that the South African people need to have continuously. But it can't be that we can have strategic partnerships, but and this is my position. It could be strategic partnerships, but it can't be privatization completely. The issue of the contracts, the usual and co-contracts. You know, I almost follow up everything that gets raised, that you raise, that the media raises and so on with the companies. Because I think it's an important oversight, and it's something that, that's why we have portfolio committees, so that you actually bring things to my attention. I want to look at another way of dealing with, because at this point we say no to commercially sensitive stuff. And that's why we did the shareholder compact in a different kind of way, but to highlight the issues that we want to look at within the company. Because I also don't want dodgy deals. I also don't want dodgy deals within ESCOM. Thus far, I've actually not felt that there were dodgy deals. I mean, I followed up something recently that a magazine has had where it says that Women of the World or something had a contract, from Kazakhstan had a contract. I followed up it, and there was no such. So, but we do need to look at, and you in particular as a portfolio committee, we need to look at how we get these commercially sensitive things into the public space differently. The role of SSCs are they to grow the economy and on one hand, and so they have to be commercially viable, and on the other hand, the state-owned companies have a developmental agenda. It has to be training artisans, welders, and so forth, and to ensure that we actually train enough people for the economy, for what the economy needs. In fact, what's very interesting, just at Medupi, the largest number of foreign workers are at a higher end in the welding section. And so I say, but I'm sure there are welders in South Africa. Why do you have to employ only foreign workers within that section? And I said, no, we don't have that type of a welder. So that means there's a weakness, and we've got to actually train the higher end of welders. The board, I'm hoping that we'll be able to the board will bring me a decision on either advertising or appointing formally the CE, and that by the end of October I would be able to take the cabinet already. So I'm hoping that by the 1st November we'll be able to say who the, look, they've done really well. And answering three questions, or three members, the board under the leadership of Dr. Ben Arnie, remember he's also an acting, and Brian Leffy, the acting CE, they've done really well. I mean, we've really pushed very hard to, and this is also something I got from the portfolio committee, was what's the plan for consistent, both member Mazzoni and member Ranto had raised this issue a couple of times in the House. What's the plan for maintenance going forward? And so you almost measure the maintenance, if I take down Matimba Unit 6, which unit from which plant will be able to make up the number of units? It's as detailed as that we've had to go. And that's why we've been able to have 30 days with no load shedding. Because you don't, otherwise you run the plant too hard. So that you don't load shed, you burn more diesel in the two OCGTs that we have, and we're not even doing that unusually. At the moment, it is just managing the maintenance so that without load shedding. So there's, I mean, we did a media briefing the other day, and I'm hoping that ESCOM can do that briefing to the Port Elizabeth Committee, where the red line shows that if it goes off that red line, we'll have load shedding. And I then, we look at it and we say, no, why don't you take down Ndrina in October, as opposed to taking it down in April, so that it ensures no load shedding in that period. Of course, let me also cautiously say that we're not out of the woods. The plants are all very old. They've all reached, or within the next couple of years, will have reached the economic period and economic year. We only, Medupi's come online now, 4 years late, so, and 8 days earlier than the closing date. I'm not sure if it's called an oxymoron or what. So Medupi's, the unit 6 has come online. While the president was there, we could almost do the first air through from unit 5 as well, but we didn't, because he did complain about pressing a button a little while ago and nothing happened. So we didn't take him there. But Unit 5, Kusile, so we'll get the dates, because I'm saying that with this level of maintenance, we would be able to bring the dates forward. Because we're not having to play catch-up. Consequent management has been very important for me. And for the last 2 years, ESCOM has not actually got some bonuses, the executives. And for example, and that was one of the measurements I can use, legally use, to ensure that if the plant, if the utility doesn't work, you don't get credited for anything. But you've raised before with me, Honourable Member, that there must be other forms of consequent management as well, other than bonuses. It's something I've raised with the board, and the board will have to look at it. Remember, I don't really run the company. I have oversight over the company like you have oversight over me. So I'm a switcher for life. So it is something that you've raised with the board. How do we accelerate the infrastructure development? In fact, you've probably seen in the media that ESCOM is going to increase the grid with about 162 million rand. They've already installed 315 kilometers of transmission lines and to increase that number. And that is the way above what they're doing at the moment. In terms of Transnet, it is also, and I just don't have the figures, so I wasn't expecting a question like this. I don't have the figures, but we have dealt with the issue of opening more lines, and the ruling NGO has actually given such a deliberate. It was a discussion that we've had about how we up the infrastructure. But what's very interesting, it still is, and you'll see a slide on one of the slides in that shows investment into the economy, and it's on page 7, and The red line is private enterprises, and the blue line is public.
We don't have
them.
We don't have
them. And the blue, can you say that the top one is the private sector, private enterprises, and the blue line is the public enterprises. And as you see, since 2007, it's increased, and then from 2010 to now, it's actually just lowered, or not lowered, it's just sort of plateaued. So it is a discussion point. Having said that, you know, there is as well, that's the one area, but there is a huge there's a big plan to actually look at the public-private sector. Now, Transnet has just signed off quite a huge agreement that also might want to talk to you about later, a public-private partnership within Transnet. And that, the idea is to check the what the market looks like with going into agreements like this. And they just signed it yesterday. Yes, I think, look, the issue remains sub judice, but it is something that I wanted to resolve as soon as possible. It just isn't fair. And so I really want them to, and I've spoken to Transnet, that we find an agreement that does not cripple the company and it doesn't harm pensioners. So, I mean, it is something that sits very high on my agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Chair, I'd really like to have your meeting on another time, but I do like being here.
We will share that with the relevant bodies in Parliament, because this day we were given this day by Parliament. We will look at that. We will look at that, Minister. I promise you. I promise the members also that we will look at those issues. Thank you, Minister, for the brief presentation that you gave us. And I think it's your time now to be released, and we will be left with the department. Thank you very much. You'll come again. We will ask you to come again. But we are still in meeting, Minister Unga, disrupting meeting sessions. We are always in order with our mission. Honourable members, we will now give over to the department to give us the presentation as per our agenda. Over to you, acting DG. Everybody's acting.
I hope that avoid going at length in terms of the issues that will be used, so that we also make enough time for again in the process of making the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We will do exactly that. DG, everything DG, we will do exactly that.
Thank you, thank you, Chair, and to Honourable Member Teddy. So that is not the intent. I wanted to ask the Chair probably for you, what is the sense of time? Because as you've seen, the presentation is quite long, the Minister has touched on other issues, but the critical ones I would like us to zoom in. So there's some scenarios, they are fitting them up, that I think we will just quickly go through, because the Minister has touched a lot on, and then so that we can zoom into the actual performance of the portfolio and each specific entity. While you're doing that, the Chair putting the presentation up, let me appreciate the time again to engage with the committee and take the opportunity quickly to introduce the team, and I'll start right at the far right, the ladies which is themselves.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Khumuzo Melite. I'm the Deputy Director General for Transport Enterprise.
But acting DG, really, you are now wasting our time, really, 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 because I think the members know the officials of the department, and is there anybody new? If there is anybody new, let a new person just introduce him or herself, because I think all of us know each other now by now. We have been interacting with this department for the past 18 months. This 18 months, for the past 12 months. Is there anybody new? Members, is there anyone?
anyone that you do not know in the department or in the...
We know
all
of them.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, FNDC. FNDC, you know, I just wanted to raise something before you start with the presentation. You know, in the shareholder compact, that the minister is really in a hurry. I think the members, what they really, really want is to know from each entity what to oversight on. How many of are expected in a certain time of which skills must be developed or which skills are developed in a certain entity. The jobs do we have women that are employed in the entity, how many disabled people in every entity, not just a blanket approach to everything. We want to when we go for an override to translate, we want to know where there is a translator. In your shareholder comments, there is something that says you have to create 20,000 jobs within 3 years. Are you going towards that 20,000 jobs, or is there something that is hindering you to do that? Those are the things that we really want to know in this, so that we know what are we oversighting on as the department going towards, because going towards improving the socio-economic development of the country. That's really what the commercial side of it. We are really not interested in numbers, in big monies that are made by the companies. We are not really interested on that. That's what I want you, everything DJ. I'm not sure if I'm putting more pressure on you on what you are supposed to do, but that's what I would want you to ask from or to do for us as so that we get this over and done with at once. Thanks, FDG. I'll give over to you. You don't have to respond to what I have said. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Then in the benefit of time, my member has requested the presentation outline. Minister has already taken us through, as well as the purpose of the presentation. This slide, Chair, just provides a specific context, and we like using this slide so that we can just remind ourselves of the role of the state-owned companies, but also where they feature relative to the productive sectors. So the productive sectors that arise at the bottom, you see that these critical sectors that form the cornerstone of what we call the 9-point plan that was developed by government under, I think, radical economic transformation. So in the 2014 budget vote, the Minister of Finance projected a 3% economic growth, but then this figure was revised downwards. In October, I think it was around October 2014, to 2%, and this was during the medium-term budget policy statement. So it shows therefore that the state of the economy remains seriously challenged, and as of 2009, we went into serious dip, and the reason for this was because of the recession. So we map the performance of the state-owned companies, and then we look at their contribution to the GDP, but using the productive sectors. So in answering the question, Chair, of what is it that state-owned companies can do to support the recovery of the country while they remain sustainable, we need therefore to identify that within the difficult space that the SOCs operate, there are also quick wins. And I think when we come to the slide dealing with the DNL, because I was with the heavy engagement on the DNL, you'll see how we use some of the quick wins in terms of private sector participation with the state-owned companies. This slide, Chair, I want to spend time on. At the beginning of the financial year, we did present our strategy and the annual performance plan, which is pillar on what we have come to term the SK strategy. So, and similar to the analogy of a motor car, we believe that mobility, size, safety, and the ability to act with speed are critical elements within which we can stabilize the economy. And we've set the progress in terms of stabilizing the state-owned companies, strengthening them so that we build them for success and we solidify their capability and enhance their business. So as we even do the monitoring of state-owned companies through the shareholder compact, we mirror that approach against this three critical elements. Chair, I won't go into this slide. Minister has already taken the members through it. And briefly then, I think we need to talk to the profitability of the portfolio. Chair, there is a worrying trend, and I think we observe this because of the nature of the function that we do, purely being a shareholder oversight. The trend that state-owned companies are always in trouble, and that they are badly managed, they are badly run, and that their news have come out. So what we're trying to demonstrate with this slide is that if you take a helicopter view and look at the SOC from a portfolio perspective, so you don't look at an S-com and SAS, but you look at them from a portfolio perspective, there's a clear indication that the SOCs are remaining resilient amidst the tough times within which, and the environment within which they are operating. And at least they are turning a profit. So what we are showing here is that if you look at the revenue generation, it remains vibrant share within the portfolio and showing the continued relevance of the state-owned companies in the economy. So overall, you'll see that in a net profit of 9 billion was generated in the 2015 financial year. However, this is it has reduced and declined slightly by about 13 billion. And this is mainly as a result of if you take 50% decrease by ESCOM, it led to this 9 billion. But also the ESCOM issues, I think, are well known by now that the increase in the primary energy cost and the unprecedented use of diesel as well, so contributed to the 50% decrease in ESCOM profit. So what we wanted to show here is just a portfolio view of the portfolio of the SOCs, and to show that even if they are they've made profit, there have been areas where they have regressed, but generally it is not that things are so bad that the news has come. Then the next slide is on the audit performance chart. And
sorry, do I see there in the slide on slide number 9, do I see a negative 182 FAS? Is that what I'm saying? Is this right? Is it correct?
Yes. And Chair, probably when we come to the LAX issues, you the DDG will talk in detail about these are legacy and historic. Remember, we come from an SAX that in the previous two financial years, they were not able to table their annual report and all of those. So it is a historic performance as well that is still breaking the company down. This slide, quickly as well, Chair, without spending more time, it also gives you the what is called the dashboard performance of the portfolio. So you see that we have one entity that is really on the green, and these numbers, for us, we don't only use them in terms of financial performance, but we say if an entity is on the green, it means that you perform your normal oversight. When it's on the yellow or the amber, it means your oversight increased relatively, depending on the circumstances of facing an entity at the time. And the rate, of course, we're saying there's a high level of oversight with specific interventions that are required from the shareholders. Now, maybe a few things that one can talk to in this slide is that if you look at Transnet, as I said, that we don't look purely at financial performance. If you look at Transnet operates in an environment where the risk of the risk and to the success of the MDF needs to be well managed, because if the commodity sector is not doing well or the productive sectors are not doing well, they affect the Transnet business in terms of cost profitability, but also the issues with the rail transport. So there are also external factors that, for example, such as the funding of the Operation Takisa initiative. You recall that this initiative was introduced when the posting MDF budget was finalized by the MPT. So you need to factor those kind of activities in a company. You also factor activities such as the performance and the relationship with the regulator, the sports regulator, and the rail and safety regulator as well, because those are external factors that the entity cannot control. When you look at your Alexco and your Safcor, Alexco, it is here that the impact of the land claim and the 8 years of the implementation of the deal of settlement continued for some time to drag the company down. So although they have increased the diamond production, the profitability levels has also increased, the company still requires a relatively high level of close monitoring from the shareholder. And to this end, what we have done, the department, we've requested the company to submit a new business plan which will include the diversification strategy to mitigate the hostile environment within which the company operates. Safcor, similar issues relative to the environment in which they operate in place, because I think by now members are aware that 65% of the land on which Safcor operates is other land claims. And this, therefore, this requires continuous engagement and collaborative efforts with the Department of Land and Rural Development, National Treasury, and the DPE. But internally, the company as well is trying to improve on management efficiencies and productivity so that we are able to take it to a better performing level. Then Eskom issues, it's in the red, and we won't go into the details. But again, issues that we all know, the aging infrastructure, the maintenance issues that are now being addressed, the delays in terms of completion of the build program, but critically, the insufficient funding to continue the KSEC program. So what has happened now, you know, with the conversion of the 60 billion loan as well as the 23 equity injection, that at least that program is being addressed, and it will allow, it will strengthen the balance sheet to some extent and allow the company to go out to the market. SAS, we've already spoken about the legacy issues there, and we continue giving it a high level of oversight. So, this is a slide that I think we can spend a bit of time on, because we have not presented to the committee. We always talk about the digital turnaround, but we have not presented this. So we believe that there are many ways in which we can improve the performance of the station company, as well as their audit performance. And for today's session, we thought there's two ways. The first one is already emulating what is best practice within the portfolio, in this case, the case of Dinel. If you look at how Dinel briefly said, you allow me, we managed to turn it around. There was a development of a comprehensive turnaround plan, which firstly was approved by cabinet. So it was developed by management and the board, submitted to the department, engaged thoroughly on that turnaround plan. And through the Minister of Public Enterprises, the plan was submitted to cabinet. But what was important about that plan was that it mandated us to establish a task team comprising of DPE, Treasury, and the general executive, which actually continues to meet on a monthly basis. So we didn't say DNL is doing well, now we're stopping in terms of the oversight. So the team continued to meet on a monthly basis. But one critical, probably success, what is the success factor, was the restructuring of the DNL decisions to focus on its core businesses. And that's where the company firstly dealt with what you call non-core. And they also identified areas where they can bring in a strategic equity partnership at the divisional level. So the decision was taken that government will still hold 100% of DNL. But at the divisional level, we will bring strategic equity partners who can come in to take shareholding. And that allowed the company to bring in the capabilities in terms of technology, human resource, and even unlock funding challenges. But it also introduced the DNL administrator to new markets. And so that model, we believe that it can be emulated in other stable companies. But there was also a committed shareholder support. And that support is also was financial in terms of cabinet taking a decision to revitalize the company and was a one-off amount of 700 million given to the company. But there was also an indemnity fund of 1.6 billion and also further provisions of guarantees. So it's a combination of factors that led to the success. Of course, the strengthening and the stabilization of the management team at both corporate and operational level. If you look at this, these are five key steps that we're taking for a company that joining today is sitting with an order book that is above 3 billion. So we believe we can emulate this within other sector companies without privatizing the entity itself. Thanks. I'll allow our director in the DG who is responsible for strategy to take the committee members to the audit panel.
Thank you, DG, and thanks, Chairperson. The department constantly evaluates how the SOC is performing in terms of complying to the legislative as well as regulatory environment. And those outcomes, they come out in the form of the external audit that is also reflected in the annual reports of the department of the state-owned enterprises. And what has come out very clear on our side is that there are four major areas that are of concern in terms of making sure that the state-owned enterprises keep a very clean audit record. I think there are very clear challenges around supply chain in order to deal with some of the irregular as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And also there are some concerns in terms of how the state-owned companies prepare their annual financial statements. In many instances, the external auditors will identify some misstatements that also affect the credibility of the annual financial statements or the annual financial records that are reflected in the statements that are issued by the state-owned companies. But also there's some serious weaknesses in the controls that are put by state-owned companies to enhance compliance, as well as the skills and capacity to be able to keep a very strong control environment to ensure that we address any non-compliance to make sure that the portfolio perform relatively well to deal with issues of non-compliance. The department, I think what was done is to make sure that we implement a very strong consequence management to clamp down on non-compliance, but also making sure that there is continuous engagement between the shareholder as well as the state-owned companies around the execution recommendations that come out of the external audit. The fourth area was really to deal with the risk management practices within the portfolio itself. The department commissioned a study during the current financial year to look at the risk management practices of state-owned companies. What came out very clear is that Dinel is one of the few companies in our portfolio that has reached the risk management maturity of funds that shows that, and also this is reflected in the performance of the company in terms of complying to all legislative requirements. But also, we also looked at the issues of skills and capacity within state-owned companies, but also within the board to make sure that we address the matters that relate to non-compliance. The minister had spoken into detail around the issues of shareholder conduct, but I think it's very important to highlight that the department introduced the logical planning and monitoring framework to begin to standardize the way in which we execute the shareholder function in the absence of a comprehensive legislation for the shareholder management within government. This allowed us to begin to codify the best practices in the execution of the function, but also to make sure that there is uniformity across the portfolio in the execution of the shareholder oversight. We have also used this to begin to build the critical foundation for the State-Owned Enterprises Act or the Shareholder Management Bill, which we believe that will strengthen the legislative framework around the management of the state-owned companies, but also the framework allows us to make sure that the state-owned companies comply to the principles or the provisions that are outlined in the Public Finance Management Act. On the elements of the shareholder complex, I think the most important point is to indicate that the complex comprises of four critical elements, and these are intended to make sure that there is a balance in ensuring the financial sustainability of its own companies, but also making sure that the transformation and developmental imperatives are also taken into account, but as well to also make sure that our state-owned companies comply to the governance as well as legislative requirements. I think this one is just a sample on the targets that are included in the ESCOM shareholder comment. Thank you.
I'm acting for the acting to
thank you, Chair. As you can see, we are open for, so that we can allow for engagement. So I'm going to ask the DDG responsible for transport enterprise to talk to transit, and each DDG will talk to the specific entity government.
Thank you, Chair. Acting Chair. With regard to Transnet, out of the key performance indicators and the targets that we had compacted Transnet on, they were able to achieve about 60% of that, 40% were not achieved. In total, there were about 306 targets for the company, and this must be taken, I think, in the context that Transnet is a very big company with about 5-6 divisions. Each and every one of them has got key performance areas that they have to focus on. And as Dina has already indicated, they're also broken down into particular categories. You would have operational, financial, developmental, and so on. So within those categories, they would still be broken down further into other levels, and this is the reason why you would see this number, this big number of targets for Transnet. But also, we started as a department with very many targets because we wanted to ensure that the company was actually focusing on those things that we wanted to focus on. And as time goes by, and we get a level of confidence that they now have this particular area under control, we then move on to the other areas that are problematic, just to ensure that the focus is increased there, and then the KPIs are accordingly decreased as well. If I could just highlight a few areas that are of concern for Transnet. The issue of port productivity and pricing in domestic ports continues to be a challenge, and this requires that the DPE, together with other departments like the DOT, who is also responsible for the port regulator, the DEI, and so on, we put our heads together to try and help Transnet in resolving this issue, because it is not only a company-specific issue. There are quite a number of investments going into our ports at this point, of which in the past there were not adequate investments into the ports themselves. So Transnet, as with other businesses, have had to play catch up with regard to investments in infrastructure across the board. And also, taking into consideration the fact that ports elsewhere in the world are actually financed, funded, subsidized, and so on by their governments, and this is not the case for Transnet. So there's quite a number of issues that we have to get around to ensure that Transnet invests and at the same time provides an affordable service to the economy. And then the volume growth in bulk lines was experienced over the years due to the number of activities that have been focused on the export lines, the investments that have been put there, and so on. But we have seen slow growth in general trade corridors because those segments of the business still require a whole lot in terms of improving operational efficiencies, and that is coming out of the investments that have been made in the track infrastructure as well as in the locomotives that are currently being acquired by Transnet. In the 2014-15 financial period, Transnet underperformed its targeted group return on total assets of 7.8% due to the accelerated investment program. So basically, with all of the investments that Transnet is making, it is still going to take them some time to see the return on those assets, because at this point, they are investing a lot. For example, they're investing in rolling stock, which is meant to give us more efficiency. They've spent money on that, but the rolling stock has not come into operation as yet because it is still being manufactured. So as soon as the rolling stock is completely finished and all of the locomotives are have been deployed, we will be able to see the return on those assets. And so we are basically monitoring very closely all of these financial metrics to ensure that we don't have any erosion of value and assets from the SOC and they focus on their common as well. Thanks.
You are not elected. Chairperson, if I can proceed, I'm actually tempted not to dwell a lot on the ESCOM issues. I think they have been discussed quite extensively. Perhaps if I could just perhaps paint a more forward-looking picture in terms of the recovery of ESCOM. And just to start off by saying, the focus on ESCOM is on improvement in operational performance, financial sustainability, the delivery of CAPEX. And I think these are the three key pillars that will be very important in order to underpin the recovery of ESCOM. In the year ended March 2015, we've seen that ESCOM's revenues declined, and that was driven largely by the decline in the mining sector, which are the key customers of ESCOM, and to a very limited extent by the trading incident in the previous year. The increase in the top line of ESCOM was driven largely by the 8% tariff increase, but plus the 5% that were granted. So the 12% increase in sales came largely from that, but not to say that ESCOM's own volumes have been increasing. So we are seeing a decline from that perspective. So going forward, it's important that there is certainty around the regulatory decisions and the sales growth of ESCOM going forward, because it's important that the entity is able to have a level of certainty in terms of what the revenue levels will come from. If you look at the decline in profit for the current year, it was largely driven by the fact that ESCOM had to fund the diesel expenditure, which was not allowed in its revenues, which eroded the company's profitability. Secondly, on finances, so the impact of the gold program, in as far as the extent which ESCOM runs the diesel plants. And it's also driven by the fact that in the last year we expected the one unit from India and the several units to be delivered, and we know that due to the fatalities we saw at Ingula, there was a delay in terms of delivering that project, and therefore that means that we had to keep running the diesel plants in order to make up for the shortfall in energy. We've seen some improvement in terms of the business's own productivity program, which looks at cutting costs across the business. ESCOM was targeted to achieve about 9 billion, but it did miss the target. They achieved about 8.4 billion, which was the key driver or gatekeeper in terms of the payment of short-term incentives, which we saw that had to be withheld for the year ended now. But for the remainder of the multi-year price determination, which ends in 2018, ESCOM is contracted to achieve a certain level of saving, and this is important also assist in improving ESCOM's financial sustainability. And for the current year and the year ahead, we will also be placing a lot of focus in terms of understanding further the drivers in terms of the cost of ESCOM's coal costs and diesel costs. I think that it is not sustainable for coal costs to be growing way above inflation levels, and that this is one of the key issues that erode ESCOM's financial position, and we definitely need to find ways to be able to zoom in at that granular level to understand the key drivers of those costs. And lastly, one of the key drivers for the recovery of ESCOM will be the recovery of the coal fleet. because we know that the pressure on the delivery of the CAPEX and running of the OCDP is because the current fleet has seen a significant decline in terms of performance. We've seen some recovery in the last quarter, but obviously the test is going to be the sustainability of this performance for the subsequent quarter before we can say that we are seeing a sustainable upstream in terms of the recovery of the existing fleet. We know that there is some decisions that we then have to make around these plans going forward in terms of life length and how much longer we need to run the plans and to be able to make some trade-offs going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, Desiree.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to go quickly through Denal, SACCO, and Alexco. In terms of the Shell contract KPIs that we contracted, for Denal we had 21, of which 8 of them were achieved and 3 of them were not achieved. And these mainly relate to research and development and targets relating to black youth-owned businesses. In terms of Denal, I mean, we've talked about the good story today, but there is one issue that the department will want to focus on, and that's relating to the transformations of the SOC, and not just transformation relating to race, but also to look at age and gender employment. The company has many junior people and many senior people, so they need to address the levels of middle management, with the bulk of the engineering skills being at the ages of 50 to 65 years old. So that will be a focus of the department in the coming years. For SACCO, we contracted the 46 KPIs with the company, and they achieved 83% of the targets. The targets that are not achieved were relating to revenue growth. In fact, I think growth from the previous year to this to the last financial year was 0.4%, and it's mainly relating to obviously the forestry industry having going through a tough time. In terms of transformation, SACCO is one of our best performing SOCs, and as the ADG had mentioned earlier, they submitted a new strategy to the department, which has is looking at the upgrade of some of their sawmilling capabilities. So we should see an improvement in the next financial year based on those investments. Alexco has achieved 100% of contracted targets. There were 12 KPIs that we contracted the company to and have achieved all of them. In terms of carrots produced, there's been a significant increase since 2012 when we brought in the new board and implementing the premium sharing joint venture. The carrots increased from 30,000 carrots to 74,000 carrots in the last financial year. And in terms of direct jobs created within the particular community, the company has managed to increase the number from 88 to 550 permanent jobs for the community of Rittersfeld, which is about 4,000 people in total. The township upgrade has been completed, and the investment in terms of that has been 130 million. Alisco has submitted a strategy to the department. And like the ADG has indicated, what we are waiting for is for the company to now present the business case, a fundable business case in terms of that strategy, and that should be coming through within this financial year.
For the last financial year, SAX had about 45 KPIs in the shareholder compact. 62% of those were achieved and the 8% were not achieved. Most of the targets that were actually achieved were more of a developmental nature. The airline missed a large number of the operational and financial targets due to each aircraft that's constantly on the ground for maintenance and infrastructure.
some of the transformation targets were missed, for example, training, and as the minister alluded to before, there's always consistent management, so no bonuses were paid to any of the executives in relation to the AMI.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the last video is the slide, if I may, before the concluding remarks. Minister has spoken a lot around the issue of how do you intend to improve the regulatory and legal governance framework. So I want to repeat them so that they can be engagement. Speech to say that for the first time, within the government, that we have a strong interdepartmental governance forum that looks at the SOC reform as a relative. So all the departments we seek, these are critical departments such as all of those are information water management oversight, DOT, DOE, and we include Treasury, BMR, and others. So at the right time when the cost of paper is reached, the chair, which means indicated is the end of the year, we'll come back and then we'll take you through the details of the reform process. In conclusion, Chair, we keep on trying to improve on the shoulder management model and oversight function. It's not an easy function because you also need to look to the environment in which the state or companies are developing. And we try to improve and develop the correct tolerance levels from a shareholder perspective in respect of the performance of state-owned companies. However, we need to indicate that contrary to what we have seen as a depressed economy and the investment environment which has not been too conducive, state-owned companies continue to fulfill their mandate. Their environment is complex and is fluid and requires the department to be agile in order to respond timely to the emerging challenges. So just to share with you then the focus in the current financial year for the department in terms of its portfolio, we will continue in respect of Eskom to ensure that we manage the risk of load shedding and that ultimately it's eradicated. But also this new program, we understand the only way we can successfully address the issues of security of supply is when we ensure that Eskom completes the build program on time and on budget. DNL will continue strengthening order book, but also we wanted to make sure that now they convert into tangible generation of revenues, and we will also continue making sure that its footprint is felt globally as well. Alisco will diversify the company to other commodities. However, this is going to require as well collaborative efforts with the departments such as DMR and National Treasury. The some funding may require or some form of guarantee from the state. South African Express implementation of the strategy 2020 to support the turnaround of the airline, but also to make sure that the relationship between SAX and SAA also, instead of being too competitive, also becomes complementary because they serve one shareholder, which is government. Safcol diversified the company, including the vertical integration, like looking at what they can do also to make sure that they get into furniture manufacturing business. Transnet will monitor the implementation of the market demand strategy to ensure improvement of the performance of the company, including the strategic corridors, but as a DDG indicated earlier on, to start addressing the challenges around the ports and inefficiencies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, FDG. FDG, what is not in this presentation that I think is missing is your performance according to your expenditure for April to June 2015. And in what you have presented to us, especially when it comes to FAA, I thought in fact what you are going to, I'm not sure about the other members. Oh, welcome, Honorable Murabe. I did not see welcome, Honorable Member. I can see when you don't wear the red overall. I thought what you are going to give us, it's the performance of the entities
of this quarter, especially the quarter that started in April up to June this year. But nevertheless, we will accept what is put in front of us. But I think the other thing that I am very much concerned of in this report, there are no KPIs of this quarter that you report on. I think the committee deserves to know every quarter, in each and every quarter, what KPIs have been achieved by this department, together with the entities, the KPIs in the entities and the department itself. I think we deserve to know that as members, and the public in general deserve to know what has been achieved by the department in those KPIs. Members, it's now time to interact, but I just want to caution you, members, we will interact with the department up until 12:15, interact and the answers from their answers as the department. We have 1 hour to go there. Thank you very much. Honorable Teddy, Honorable Mazon, Honorable Luyenge, it's Teddy, Mazone, Luyenge, Murabela, I'm trying to be democratic, and Snowband. Oh, so I missed your hand. Sorry, Honorable Moganda, can we start with you and then come to Honorable can you start with the Honorable Ted? We are coming from the Women's Month.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Thank you, Acting Chair. I only have just a few things to say. The SNDG was reporting on this historic elements, legacy issues, especially at ESA. This one is just a request that maybe we are now 20 years in the government, so it's a humble plea that maybe we move away from always reporting on blaming history on what we are supposed to be doing. I think by now, at early age, we should be saying we have a problem on 1, 2, 3. This is what we need to do. This is where we are going. Instead of always saying we are having these are post-historic elements, legacy issues and all that.
But Honorable Mobanda, remember that we are dealing with a history of 340-something years,
yes.
20 years.
I understand that, Chair, but what I'm saying is that maybe it's time that we identify what it is that we need to do and say this is what is the problem, this is how we are going to solve it or how we need and try to do that. Number two is on the communication strategy. We've always said the DPE needs to improve on this one, especially in highlighting the good work that are done in other SOEs. For example, I know most of the time when the department presents, we are always praising the NEL, and it's good. I think we need to praise them. But we also forget our other small SOEs. We don't really highlight the good work that they are doing, especially on this Alex for increasing the permanent job. I mean, we've increased them from 88, which is 462, for that small community. So we really need to make sure that our people out there know this. The third one is on targets, like I think that one is covered. That they are not very clear. In most of the presentations, they say we are compact targets,
49% achieved, 50 not achieved, achieved, and we're not really sure what it is that they were supposed to do. Maybe if we had a clear indication on the target. The other one is on the mail. There's slide 20 where it says the self-funded RD sourcing from black owned youth business where the only target missed above by say 5%. I wanted to know what is it that the mail is, what is being done to improve this. If we say we are having youth business at the target that we missed, what is it that we are improving? Yes, I think that's
all. Thank you, Chef. The green labor head slide to me is a very important slide. The mail being the only one in green, I see Transnet half green, half yellow. The shower arrested. Before it goes to yellow, Alexco is yellow. I see Eskom red and SMX Dow red. And being the only one that is financially qualified. But I think what the owners would like what been saying before the minister left, really can't be business as usual. For those that are not performing as required. So just reiterating what I've been saying earlier on, that surely this issue of competence management needs to be attended to very, very seriously. Now, to me, the general picture that we're getting here says that some of the, most of the entities are doing quite well. I see challenges are there. But you remember one of the recommendations we've made in some of our engagements was the issue of a forum of all the entities where we are able to, those that are doing quite well, are able to share best practice and assist those that are not, especially in the area of financial management. It can also be great in terms of progress in that regard. Because we tend to talk much about those that are not doing well, and then as if it's like all the entities are in crisis, which is not the case. So if you can just share with us progress in that regard in terms of how the former, the forum is evolving. Secondly, is the gender balance SOC, where are we? But I wanted to start with on a positive note. At the level of the department, it's commendable to see that women are in charge. I think it's commendable. I can see here. But just to share with us, where are we? SOC, especially at that level, top management, so that we are able to know and also assist in terms of how best can we deal with this thing. The return on total assets, the 7.8%, surely is also a cause for concern. Transnet for us is, I don't remember you going at length in terms of clarifying what led to that kind of a situation. And lastly, I think from the oversight we had yesterday at Quebec, we have a general impression that you are doing quite well in terms of the work that is being done there, especially in the area of the measures that we put in place. I think we must commend the ESCOM really for the work that is going on at Quebec from the other side, physically and yesterday.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd like to concentrate on three issues, if I may.
The one issue is, you know, our committee, we meet with the state-owned entities that come in, and most of the time we're quite disappointed with what is presented to us. But we had a meeting with SA Express, and we were delighted to be able to congratulate them on what was can only be described as a miraculous turnaround. I'd like to know if, as DPE, you are facilitating meetings between SA Express and some of your bad-performing SAEs so that best practices can be exchanged between the companies. Because we should all be learning from each other. And what's happened at SA Express is the way we want to see our SAEs going forward. So that's my one point. Chair, then, of course, ESCOM remains a massive concern. And there's a few issues that don't really tally up here. Now, of the 37 performance targets that they had to reach, only 51% were met. I mean, that's incredibly well, and it's something we need to be very worried about. In the integrated report for 2014-2015, we saw that 51 million rand was allocated to frivolous and wasteful expenditure. Now, when 51 million rand is disappearing from a state-owned entity for frivolous and wasteful expenditure, someone's head has to roll, Chairperson. And I think it's time that we take a very strong and firm stance, both as a portfolio committee and both as a ministry, that we put our foot down and we start firing people and holding people to account for this kind of waste of South African money, because that's what it's all about. Chair, there was a dramatic drop of income from 7 billion rand to 3 billion rand, which of course was blamed on the diesel and gas turbines. Hence one of the reasons we wanted to see the contract so that we know exactly what's being paid. I'm sorry, Minister Brown and Chair, for further explanation on that. But Chair, then something does disturb me in this report. On the slide it said, no bonus is paid by ESCOM. Now that simply isn't true, because in the integrated report, it is stated that 10.8 million rand worth of long-term incentive bonuses were paid out. That works out to 1.4 billion, million rand per executive. So we must be very careful in how we word things, Chair, because it might, you know, when we say no bonuses were paid out, they are long-term incentive bonuses. Now, Chair, an incentive bonus is supposed to be a bonus that gets paid out for you doing your job correctly, for making sure that things are improving. Now, when you can only reach 51% of your target, when we sit in a committee, Chair, and with the greatest deal of respect, how dare we congratulate ESCOM for keeping the lights on for 30 days? The lights should never be going off. We should be furious with a entity that can't keep the lights on. And then we turn around and we say, congratulations for keeping the lights on for 30 days. They should be on for 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, not 30 days. That's their job, Chair. It's like congratulating us for coming to portfolio. We're supposed to do that. ESCOM is supposed to keep the lights on. They're just doing their job. And to have 10.8 billion, a million, sorry, I keep saying billion, it's million, 10.8 million rand worth of bonuses, long-term incentive bonuses being paid out, how do you explain that to the South African public? Of course people are furious. Chair, otherwise I'd like to agree with what my colleague said earlier. Companies like Denel and Transnet that are doing well, why don't we ever read about them doing well? We mustn't hide our successes. We must applaud our successes. We must applaud the companies for what they're doing right. And why are you having a press conference to say how well these companies are doing? The South African public doesn't know that they're doing anything. And we must, just because there's such negativity, let's also make sure that when there's something to be positive about, we let people know. It's a good... The Nil is a great success story, the way they turn themselves around. And let people know how well the Nil is doing, even when they came to visit us, Chair, remember? And they told us about the rhino project and what they were doing to help with the rhino conservation. South Africa doesn't know about that. We know about that, but no one else knows about that. So when we give a hiding to those that aren't doing well, we must also make sure that those that are doing well are applauded for doing so. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Madwana. I did not want to interrupt you, otherwise for commending ESCOM on the 30 days of not load shedding. After we had been load shedding for so many months, I think they deserve that. That's why we said to them, we commended on what they are doing. We know that it's their job to keep the lights on, but because of where we come from, as South Africa, Eskom is doing well, if the company is doing well, we must commend that company. We must commend that company. I will now give over to Honorable Nguyen.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will echo the very same sentiments with regards to the expectation that we need to get the understanding of the department as it pertains to its operations. It must come from the phenomenon, the understanding as to how this acting or the acting is affecting production. You know, this political administrative dichotomy that is requiring an interface. How the boards of SOEs interact with the executive. We must get an understanding from each of the SOEs to understand that there is a vibrant board and it is doing 1, 2, 3, but there is a lot of money that the taxpayer is actually incurring to pay those boards, and we must understand as to how do they do their work. Also in the department, we would want to get a view, the phenomenon, a view as it pertains to the vacancy rates from the department side as well as SOEs. And we must talk to your levels, acting DG. How do you feel if you are acting for 8 months in a position of importance as leading a department where we need production? We want to see a result. But if you are acting, you don't know whether you are coming or going. If you have much more time looking for greener pastures elsewhere because you don't know whether there is future here or not. So it also relates to the SOEs. And then I want to echo your sentiments as they relate to the ESCOM. ESCOM has done splendidly well. We are actually experiencing a situation whereby dating back from the era of apartheid, where we are not very sure if we have the right to have rights. It can't be correct, it can't be moral for us not to give a pat on the shoulder when someone has done well. We can't say it's an expectation when we know the challenges that we are facing. I mean, it is not correct to maybe behave as if the issue of privatization is something that is not trivial by any agenda. It's not something that has come up. Put pressure on Eskom to produce. When we know that when a child is born, in each and every household, when a child is born, there is no provision of a bit of electricity that is meant for that particular individual that has been given birth to. And we understand the predicament that we are as a country as it relates to the provision of basic services, including electricity. This electricity is a basic service which we will never, even if one can come tomorrow and say we will govern. In fact, others governed before, they could not produce anything for us because we were not seen as if we qualify to have light. So it can't be correct, Chairperson, for us to be limited in our generosity. We should be able to say now we have seen the ground that has been covered by ECHO under present conditions, and we will continue to do that. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Agreeing with my colleague here, Honorable Mazon, it will be wrong for us to praise the fish for swimming, because that's its task to do so, to make sure that it's able to navigate through the water and all of that. The same applies with ESCOM. More so, when we know that some of the challenges that we're confronted with presently are the challenges that have been made by the negligent, irresponsible people that were actually supposed to ensure that the lights are on. All of the issues that have been coming, we know that water, some of the issues that have caused the very same load shedding and all of that. So it can be right. But that's not the issue that I'm deliberating on. I think the presentation here, to me, it is actually insufficient. Because it looks like we're sitting in a business meeting where we're actually discussing and reporting on issues that has to do with the profit and all of that. What is actually lacking with DG? I might be wrong, but I think that's my observation in terms of the presentation. It is the labor issue that continues to be one of the important issues that we cannot actually ignore, because they ultimately affect the very same objectives that we want to achieve at the end of the day. Because we know that if workers they strike, if workers they are protesting and all of that, that might affect the very same objectives that we want to achieve and all of that. So it's one issue which is actually lacking. And by the way, we know that in one of the issues that I think that are going to come in the near future, very strongly DG, is the issues around labor in urban ports, which I know by now that we have already, our party has actually forwarded the letter to the attention of the minister to raise all of these important issues. We can't really celebrate when at least we are doing well, but on the side of the very same workers who are making sure that production does happen, we need also, it needs to be reflected on the presentation so that we can be able to understand clearly. Let me make a very practical example in terms of the consistency of the presentation. In Alesco, we are very explicit to explain how many jobs and all of those things that have been created and all of that. But as you go to other state-owned companies' presentation and all of that, you just mention things in a very short way. It's not actually clear what is actually happening. If you can actually help with regard to that, we'll be very much happy. The other issue that I think I must also express here, the issue of localization is something that has been coming up for quite some time. And I know in one presentation where the Department of Trade and Industry was presenting, it raised all of those issues. In the context of the very same mandate of state-owned companies of growing the economy and making sure that the developmental agenda is actually pursued without any hindrance, is something that we need to pay much attention to localization. The point that I'm trying to advance is that the Department of Trade and Industry, they were very much clear that sometimes we find that the very, very state-owned companies, even though we've got capacity to manufacture some of the goods and all of that, they simply ignore all of those things and they will actually go abroad and procure services from abroad. Whereas we've got the very same thing in our internally. It's a matter of a concern. It's a matter that we need to look into what measures are putting in place that some of these things, they don't just happen like the very same executives of state-owned companies. They don't just do as they please and all of that. I think we need to be very much firm on the issue of localization, because it's for the benefit of the people who want to see a well-performing state-owned companies. We need to start locally and make sure that we localize our own issues so that we can be able to achieve our objectives. The last issue that I want to add, I know most of the time we talk about all of these things that, you know, is a work in progress and all of that, but I think we need to be fair. I really want to appreciate that we get the report, squad challenge, all of that. Sometimes it's important for us to really understand where we're going. To say that how long are we going to take to redeem some of the state-owned companies that they find themselves in debt. It's something that we can project. I understand that we're working within a very complex economic setting where you can't be definite to say that this is how we're going. But I think for us to also make sure that we're able to measure whatever that we're doing, it's important that we know that some of these things that are going to take us for so long and all of that. That is the question that I really want to ask. And thank you very much, Chairperson, and don't abuse your chairmanship, please.
Yeah, just to add, it's one issue that relates to DINEL. DINEL is actually pleased for doing well, for future entry. But there is a contradictory view that there's a restructure divisions about DINEL. What informs that? Why would you think of changing a winning part? Then, maybe on the issue that relates to ESCOM, Chairperson, the regulations for ESCOM will never be restricted. They are justifiable. We can justify them. Then the business like presentation. No, the other thing, we must not contradict ourselves. We said here before the presentation, when the minister was, even the minister was already, had already left, that the presentation must be made at such time that it doesn't take us more than an hour to deal with both the presentation and the discussion. And all of a sudden, the same committee says, you are giving us a business-like presentation. We are the ones who say so. That they must make it very short. Thank you.
For a few concerns that I want to raise. This issue of the economic recession that has come out a lot, you know, we were told that the economic recession, the global economy recession had not hit us that hard as South Africa. But it keeps on coming out when we are dealing with the when we are dealing with the entities. I am not sure which one to, or maybe I don't have an understanding of this economic recession that happened before. The other issue, acting DG, when I made comments after the presentation, I spoke of the report that we need to get, the specific KPIs and everything of the quarter, because I thought SAF is doing very well in the company. And the movement, they have moved. I thought they have moved from the red carpet going towards the yellow, heading for the green carpet. But now the way you've put it, it looks like it has returned back to the red board. The other worry is what Honorable Daisy, maybe Honorable Mazoni, have raised in the issue of what do you do if legislation is not followed and adhered to. We have been asking this question for a long time. This is almost a pending question in this committee. We've asked this question with the Auditor General also, but the Auditor General said there is nothing they can do. It's not in their scope of work to punish if there is any punishment that needs to be done if there is no legislation, that the legislation is not complied with. In slide 14, Mr. Greener, the audit findings say the supply chain management and whatever. Do you think in all these audit findings do we have competent people in these positions? Are they able
to take us forward. If there are no complete ends people, what is the department doing in replacing them or in training or developing them to become competent for the positions that they are put in, if there is anything like that. I thought ESCOM will also update us on the issue when we're talking about ESCOM on the issue of the recent strike. We need to know, we don't need to get it from the media. The recent strike that happened, how did it impact in the running of Medupi Power Station and in the production of Medupi, even if it's done by people who are no more part of it, how did it impact in the running of Medupi? Didi, I have asked you to send us a performance of the department for April, June 2015, and I specified in terms of expenditure and finances in the department, because we are heading for October, and October is the period of the BRRR, and we want to know do you still need more money? Do we have to say to the Department of Finance, give them more money, or do we say take the money that they have and send it so that we spend it somewhere? That is why we need that report. To Transnet, SUDG, as Honorable Murapela has said, that the DTI, we had a committee meeting with UDTI. UDTI has spoken about the lack of skill among SOCs to buy locally. And that has come up very sharply from them. And it was a general observation by UDTI, that one. But with specific challenges with Transnet, they raised the issue of the South African port tariff and inefficiencies that are a major barrier to the national industrialization. I'm not sure what is Transnet going to say about that. And they said it includes the port tariff for value-added manufactured products, according to the World Bank, are amongst the highest in the world. The export of primary commodities and the import of value-added products are priced lower than the export and value-added products. Those are the challenges. And the last challenge is the port regulator is not responsible for the regulation of the National Port Authority charges. And they made an example of a port regulator does not regulate Transnet port terminal charges, which is in the recent past has been raised and significantly above inflation costs. I just want Transnet to give us a brief response on those things. That will be my. Do you want to? I give you only one for one question or one person that you want to raise, and then we wait for we get the response from the department and the entity.
Yeah, no,
thank you. I'm not abusing my chairmanship.
Yeah, I think everyone was making an observation in terms of the presentation and what is actually expected to get out of the presentation. Now, that's my critique on the presentation, and I can't be apologetic about that to say this is like an all of that. It's my observation out of the presentation. The only question that I have is around the issue of non-compliance. You just said in terms of the supply chain management, some of the witnesses that we've been able to get is non-compliance. And I believe by now that maybe there are systems in place from the department to ensure that each and every state-owned companies are compliant to whatever supply chain management processes or procedures. I just want to understand, are we getting some results out of the systems that they're able to put in place as a Department of Public Enterprise? Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Rafaela. I will now give over to you, DDG, and your entities to respond to the questions.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the committee members for questions, observations, and concerns, and some of the issues that require clarity.
And I would allow my colleagues to answer some of the questions. Some of them specifically, I'll direct them. But I wanted to start maybe on the point that was raised relating to the presentation and the quality of the presentation. We do our best endeavor to ensure that we provide information to the committee. And maybe one is to request on behalf of the department from the committee and who you chair that maybe what will help going forward so that we manage the committee's expectation and the nature of engagement is to get a guideline of the issues that we would like to see as we are requested to present. This time we were requested to provide the committee with a briefing on progress made in addressing corporate governance challenges of SOCs and audit performance. And we limited ourselves to that. So it would be helpful as well if the committee could guide every time before, so that we manage the expectations, because we don't want to hide information, we don't want to be serious, we don't want to share information. So that would be a plea from the department that I think we are ready to do, provide quality to the committee. Thank you, Chair. Then the issues of principle and strategy that I want to deal before I get into the content for the questions and the concerns. I think we need to decide as South Africans on how we want to deal with matters of state-owned companies. And I'm going to combine the issues that were raised by Honorable Mazoni and Robanda around tracing denial or communicating too much around the denial turnaround as well as the placing as well. I think we needed to do that. We needed to continue doing that, and let's start with ESCOM. We're praising ESCOM for this 30 days that have been able to deal with no load shedding, because there was a time when this company is single-handedly being blamed for the economic meltdown. It's blamed by companies when they wanted to close down or retrench. And it is blamed for just generally the fact that we are increasing every single thing from small, medium enterprises to big corporates. ESCOM is being blamed. And there was a time when the outlook was so negative that the public were threatened that they're going to be total blackout. So if we are to change the narrative, even little steps of 30 days needs to be celebrated. And we would like to come to the committee with an understanding that we celebrate every month, so no matter how small, no matter how big. Because if then we're also going to be celebrating big milestones, we will not be able to incentivize in the associates to do better. And I think it's for us that we believe that we need to continue communicating. And because you also encourage even a junior employee who works at the power station at ESCOM to continue to do the best before they can see that they are being recognized. And on the issue of DNL, same thing. The department and DNL went through a very painful exercise of a turnaround, where we were criticized in the media, where we were criticized in every committee of parliament. Now it's about time to show that we went back, we told public, South African public, that we will go back and turn this company around. Now let's do it when we cannot be silent. Because then we perpetuate the negativity that is talk only about the problems in the portfolio. And I agree with the point of lessons learned, of sharing, and we started doing that around Chairperson's Forum. The fact that there was a recognition that take the best that is in Transnet now to go and solve the problem at home is exactly that. Because you have people that were able to stabilize Transnet and say to them, go and assist within the portfolio. And we needed to encourage them so that any state-owned company CEO who's doing well, they know that they can be taken from another SOC to another one. Because we wanted the best to rotate. Some people, they don't only belong in the private sector. I think the public sector, but in the government more so. So I think it is important for us to be put there, because we are going to continue really honestly talking around ESCOM and talking around the good story of Kenya and how each and every entity is taking it down. We are convinced we are going to tell ICFOM, and it's already beginning to tell. We spoke about the car diamond that production that is increased. Subcall is beginning to tell. So we are going to turn them around, and we are going to continue talking about the turnaround. Because it's not only for us, the GTE portfolio, but for other SOCs within other government departments as well. So I would leave it at that, Chair, and then just maybe I would like all the ESCOM-related questions my colleagues to talk to, because there are other issues just off or that nature that we can talk to, but let me allow the team to deal with specific issues of Transnet denial, but also to say one thing on the denial. When we are talking about the restructuring, it's not the restructuring the current. There was lessons learned to say, what did we do to get denial to where it is? So it was not only government putting money through guarantees and injections and indemnities, but it was also recognition that you need to restructure the business, because if you do business as usual, something must give in the business itself. So it's not that we are going to fix what is being broken. And I love the analogy, I must say, Chair, as well, of the creating a fish for swimming. And I thought, but what if the water in which the fish is swimming is contaminated? And this is the special kind of breed of all the fish that you have. So I just allow the colleagues then to speak to some of the SOC specific issues.
Thank you, Chair. If I could start with the issues that were raised last by the Chair around the DDI concerns. In the presentation, I did talk about the collaboration between ourselves, DDI, and the post regulator to try and deal with those anomalies around pricing within the post, and the fact that we also have to take into account the context that the South African post are not in any way assisted from a financial perspective by government, as opposed to what you see is happening elsewhere in the world where our governments are assisting the port companies. Be that as it may, the port regulator and Transnet, DDI, ourselves and DOT are working around that, and to that effect, the port regulator has already made a decision that is now being implemented within Transnet to address the imbalance between the prices for raw material as well as for finished products. So this strategy is being rolled out throughout, or rather in a fixed approach, where we will see a balance being achieved between the two categories of those commodities. Around the issue of the port regulator not being able to regulate within port terminals, the way that regulation is carried out is that you have two types of regulators. You have the Competition Commission, you have the Economic Regulator. So the port regulator will regulate in areas where the company is monopolistic. So Transnet National Ports Authority, as an example, is a monopoly infrastructure provider. Transnet Port Terminal, however, is operated in a competitive space where it is competing with other service providers for the types of services that they are offering within the ports. So the Competition Commission is responsible for that regulation in that space. So, you know, it would be very difficult for the Economic Regulator to actually go into a state of the Competition Commission. So what has been happening in other countries within that two regulation in this space is that sometimes there is concurrent jurisdiction between the Economic Regulator and the Competition Commission. We have not yet achieved that type of collaboration to the extent that other countries have between our Economic Regulator and the Competition Commission, but I think it is something that the country needs to look into. Moving on to the DTI statement about localization, Honourable Member, I think that probably, because we did go back to check, we think that probably the statement was just too broad, and the Minister has addressed this to a certain extent in one of the discussions that we had, that Transnet, as an example, has reported on all of their localization initiatives. All of the locomotives that are being manufactured right now have got localization commitments that are being carried out by Transnet. And then she also today, this morning, referred to the example of welders, that you would get welders from the international sphere because we probably don't have the level of skills that are required in this space. But maybe what when DTI was making the statement, they were referring to other SOCs which are not the same, the portfolio of DPE, because as far as the DPE SOCs are concerned, those local aviation commitments are being carried out. And then in terms of us facilitating meetings between SA Express and other, I think Honorable Manzini probably wanted to say good performing SOCs, because I wrote here bad performing SOCs. No, for SA Express. Good performing SOCs. Yes. So as the Acting DG had already indicated, we do have a chairperson forum with the minister and the chairpersons and the CEOs of all of the companies. They will share a good practice, and then we actually cascade that to the SOCs as we do, for instance, the shareholder compacts, and we work on the targets that they're supposed to achieve. We do encourage them, and we also facilitate in many cases skills swaps between the companies. So that is currently being done. I think that's, if I haven't missed anything, I think that's about it from Transnet side and SAS.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to also just address some of the issues relating to localization. In 2007, the department introduced the Competitive Supply Development Program that was targeted to maximize the industrial impact of the BIL program that was being undertaken by SOC. And that has seen significant results in terms of supporting the development of new capabilities in the manufacturing sector, but also making sure that we deepen the manufacturing capability of the South African economy. Just to make one particular example, Transnet in the previous financial year spent 70.1 billion rand in supplier development related contracts, which was really important for trying to boost the demand for the manufacturing sector. I think there must be that engagement between ourselves and DTI to try and clarify what they were referring to. But on our side, I think we're making progress in maximizing the impact of our BIL program. I think on the issues of supply chain, I think what the Auditor General indicated to us was that most of the weaknesses in the supply chain process were being identified by the state-owned companies themselves, and the state-owned companies themselves trying to put in place measures, which is a significant improvement from the previous periods where most of the inefficiencies were being identified by external auditors. From our side, I think there is a positive trend, but there's a lot of that needs to be done to address some of the issues relating to irregular expenditure as well as wasteful and fruitless expenditure.
Thanks, Chair. If I can run quickly through the ESCOM issues, I think the first one from Honorable Teddy is I think we welcome the commendation of the correct performance. I think the Pastion operates in a tightly regulated environment, and I think it's one of the key drivers for the sort of performance that we see. But I think it's quite important that we are not complacent in this sort of environment. And I think it's the discussion yesterday. We've seen that, you know, some of the major incidents that happened around the world were in an environment where, you know, people were quite comfortable in how the issues were being run. So I think it's commendable performance, but certainly it's important that we keep focus and ensure them the highest level of compliance. Honorable Madonna raised an issue around the increase in wasteful expenditure, and I think it's one of the key drivers of why ESCOM now sits in the red. And I think the key issue in this area, in which the minister has raised to the board as well, is the consequence management around that has not been as robust, and we want to see these being dealt with expediently, because if you let one rand go missing and it's okay, you know, then you set the tone for how the rest of the business then takes cue from that.
In terms of the 10.8 million of the incentive paid, I think the remuneration in terms of ESCOM centers around the key pillars. And the first one is around retention of talent. The second one is to reward good performance. And the third is to be competitive in the market. Now, specifically on the 10.8, this is bonuses that we awarded in 2012-13. No, 11-12 and vested in 13-14 and were paid out only in the last financial year. So it comes out from 3 years ago and it's not linked directly to the performance in the current, so it's a long-term, incentive that was paid out. And the short-term was not paid out for the previous year as per the company's overall performance. Honorable Ransom raised an issue around the UDP strike. I think we've always said that with the builds and the overall labour market in South Africa, the issue of labour instability will always be an issue on the build programme. And as you would have seen from the strike that happened about 2 months ago, there was a number of people that were demobilised from the site, and subsequent to that there was a disciplinary process that ESCOM followed, and about 1,300 employees or so were dismissed from that process. And the strikes that we are seeing subsequent to that and the one that happened yesterday is linked mainly around that, and ESCOM has to keep a close look in terms of how they deal with labour. But I think the highest risk we face now is that as the project reaches its peak and starts to take off, we will see a lot of labour that gets demobilised, and it's important that the demobilisation plan is robust enough and can be kept tight enough such that the social issues that arise because of that can be managed. I think, you know, one of the key issues we've always discussed is that with the big infrastructure built, and linking to what Minister Ndiji have been saying about the welding and the diesel, the welding skill level, is that if we had a broad enough pipeline of projects, it would be easier to move people around. So as the investment cycle starts to taper off, you know, we're going to be faced, I think, broadly as a country, not as ESCOM, with what we do with the excess labour that was gained through the build program, and when next can we deploy people, and such that, you know, we have economic activity in the communities as the business comes to an end. So I think as part of the Medupi Leadership Initiative, we said how else can the skills be utilised to allow people to be able to employ themselves in certain areas or to start up their own businesses. How can people be assisted through in partnership with the contractors that are in those areas to ensure that we minimise the impact? But I think it's an unfortunate downside of project orientated employment, because as the budgets come to an end, you will see that big jump or taper off in terms of employment levels.
Can we go further, but stick to the context, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think for me, I only have one question to answer. Honourable Novanda asked what has been done right now to improve the missed targets in terms of the youth-owned companies. I know for a fact this year what the supply chain has done, they have a supplier development day in the invited all their suppliers or potential suppliers to come and understand the work that Enel is doing, and so they can understand what they can supply. So as part of that process, we should be seeing that target being addressed. And I think the ADG has responded to Honourable Liane's question regarding the restructuring.
Thank you. Just quickly on one question that you did ask about the economic recession, why we keep on saying that South Africa is not as hard hit as others, but when we talk about SOCs, we refer to the impact of this. This is because the impact is relative. When you look at how other countries have been hit by the economic recession, South Africa is in a bit of a better position than all the other countries. If I could just use a practical example, the situation is so bad in Greece that people are not even able to get money from the ATMs. We are not there yet. So that's the relativity.
I think there's a few things that the team have not dealt with, leaving them to me. I just wanted to close on this economic outlook issue.
we always use those slides as well, because we always say state-owned companies are not investing for themselves, but investing for the country. And if you look at, again, the VDG said the global trend, our countries react differently when they are hit by recession. We see what China is doing now. They will do everything to, including devaluing their currency, looking at how they can deal and influence the GDP growth. So it depends really, but we believe that the state-owned companies also provide a buffer, because they continue investing at this level even when the private sector is investing. So I thought I must just clarify that as well, Chair. Chair, on your question, the expenditure levels, we take the point, the Chair is away. The quarter ended end of July. We've already finalized our Q1 report as the department. We also finalized our annual report for the previous year, which will be tabled to the end of this month. The intent is our PMO, we would be engaging with the committee and the SAM, then we'll be able to come and present those. The issue on presentation of state-owned companies quarterly, we presented the annual report of the 2015. But if the committee wants to engage on a quarter level, we can go back in the department and see how we fit that, and obviously how the committee is going to fit in your own programs, because we do get quarterly support from the state-owned companies that we analyze and provide them with the investor brief. Chair, then there was a question on the whole issue of wasteful expenditure. And if you look at the outcome of all the state-owned companies in terms of audit performance, we believe that as much as you want to do consequence management, you must try to strike a healthy balance to make sure that your corrective measures are taken at an appropriate level. You don't want a situation whereby you have junior levels at the procurement or supply chain management offices being the ones just being responsible for underperformance. You need to be able to create a pyramid whereby from boards, executives, and even junior management, they share the responsibility. So we have already asked those entities that have recorded an increase in their wasteful and fruitless expenditure, they are providing a report, because that report as well is required in terms of PFMA and the Treasury regulations. And in it, the board must indicate the levels of the expenditure, the actions that have been taken, and whether they are being they are recovering the amount as well. The colleagues have spoken on localization, but maybe we need also to give the committee the comfort that if you look at the CSDP and you look at what Transnet is actually done with the China South Rail and the China North Rail contract, of that 1064 locomotives, only 14 now have been assembled in China. The rest is in South Africa, split between Kuruskoot, Devon, and others. And a number of young engineers have been trained in different trades. So we do give for localization. And I think at the right times we can engage further in terms of those procurement shifts. Then I think the last issue was on SAX, why it looks like SAX is regretting. And I want to link this to the issue again that Honorable Rwanda raised in terms of the history and the legacy. We keep on talking the history. The history that we're talking about is not the history in terms of in the context of our democratic dispensation. It's the history in terms of the period 2010 to 2012, when SAX performed so badly that it was a time when the department had to write to the Speaker of Parliament to withdraw that report and also even to indicate that it will be tabling late. So that's the legacy that we're talking about. We've cleaned up from a company that was not even able to submit an annual report to a company that Honorable Mazwane is talking about. So that's the kind of legacy we're talking about. But it is not regressive. What is happening is that today, tomorrow, we'll be having the annual general meeting for the company. And we will be able, when we table the annual report, you'll be able to see all the good progress that we're talking about, because it's provided for in the annual report that will be tabled at the end of the month as well. That will be all, Chair, and as usual, thank you for the engagement and the comments. We will continue improving how we do our work.
Thank you, FTBDG, and thank you to the SOEs that have come. I think all DDGs from department. Sorry.
sorry, acting deputy. And thank you to the members of the committee and your questions and your engagement with the department itself. We will keep on doing this for the rest of the 4 years that we that is in front of us. The meeting with the department is now adjourned. We are going to have a meeting, a 3 minute meeting for just to check on our minutes in the committee. Members, you will remember that we have 3 minutes of the 19th of August for a meeting that is present me, and I'm chairing that meeting, so I have to go and prepare for it. Sorry for engaging with you while the department is. We took this minute back for correction. They are in front of us. I think.
Did you send them back to?
Yeah. Here are the minutes. We need to adopt them. I'm waiting for your hand, members. If there is any, or we go page by page. Page 1. Fine, with page 1. Page 2. Anything, Honourable Teddy?
Chair, 3.1. Second task, the following are some of the factors that you guys just put on the little bit. You can see that that certain has not to meet a level of strength. There are some of the factors identified as industry organizations. Yeah. Maybe as the identified factors that the industry industrialization will admit us. Okay. Three, the services. Okay. I thought I wanted to appreciate them to move first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Three.
Because the very first two sections is there, 3.2 there. It's like, it might even make sense if the first one is not there at all. Because I see there the first section with semicolons, it was supposed to be followed by your bulletins. But now still there is another section. It can still make sense if the first section is not there at all.
Page 4.
And then...
Sorry, Chair, I disagree with that, because if you take away the first sentence, then you won't know that it was the Department of Trade and Industry that identified the regulatory impediments. So it wasn't just a general identification, it was the Department of Trade and Industry that identified it. And if you take away the sentence, we won't know the DTI that identified it. Yeah, if you just remove the semicolon. Yeah.
I think we can adopt the minutes with those amendments.
Thank you.
if you want to say it on the
thank you very much, members. The meeting stands. Well, there's an announcement about the oversight. Sorry.
Honourable members, the oversight for next week, we're going to I want to send you the program, but basically, we're just hiring there. Alex from Upington. On Monday night, members will be flying from Cape Town and Johannesburg up in there. We'll sit at Upington. Then on Tuesday morning, we'll drive to Alexa from Upington. That's 1,000 kilometers. The second to the Caribbean, she doesn't have so we can rather ride and don't take the program. And then we'll arrive, only for Tuesday, we'll only ride for the 7th and then we'll